Well, good morning, Hope. My name is Walt. I'm one of the pastors here. It is good to be with you as we close our series today on hospitality. You know, in a time where our world is as divided as ever, where people are trapped in loneliness and isolation, where it can be difficult to know people and to be truly known by them, hospitality can be the antidote that we desperately need. And so today we are going to look at two dinners that teach us something crucial about hospitality. The first dinner we're going to look at is from Game of Thrones. No, I'm kidding. That would be ridiculous, right? We're going to look at a dinner from the Bible. But this one has some serious Thrones vibes to it, right? This dinner, this first one, is hosted by Herod, who is the king of Judea for a time. And if you're familiar with the story of Jesus, then his name might ring a bell. His father, Herod the Great, was the king when Jesus was born. And he was infamous for ordering the murder of infant boys across his kingdom because he was so nervous about the rumors of another king that had been born. When he died, his kingdom passed down to his son, Herod Antipas. Only, he didn't get the entire kingdom. His father didn't trust him enough to rule by himself, so the kingdom was divided into four sections, of which Herod, that we know, was one of the rulers. So already, we get a little bit of insight into his character. His father, who is known as the Great, was an insecure and ruthless man who didn't think his son was fit to rule the kingdom. So now we're getting into some succession vibes, right? HBO is just taking all of his content from the Bible. The first century historian Josephus records that Herod, while married, had an affair with his brother's wife named Herodias. Both of them divorced their spouses and married one another. His former father-in-law, who is also a king, was seriously ticked off and waged a war that was really damaging to Herod politically. So he was a weak king living in the shadow of his father, desperate for approval that he never got. To compound this, along comes John, also known as John the Baptist, the cousin of Jesus, who really didn't care what anyone thought, and made it a point of reminding Herod that, hey, cheating on your wife with your sister-in-law is not cool. And this wasn't some kind of like quiet sidebar either. John was putting Herod's name in the streets. And so Herod put him in prison. So now the table is set for a rather nightmarish dinner party. It's Herod's birthday. And so he throws a big party for all of his friends. It's surely lavish with plenty of choice food and drink, probably a lot of drink, because what ends up happening is that Herod's stepdaughter ends up dancing a dance that is so pleasing that he promised to give her whatever we asked for. Now, in these moments, we kind of need to read the Bible with our adult glasses on here, right? What kind of dance would make a king promise to give up to half of his kingdom anything she asked for? Yikes. And it's his stepdaughter. Furthermore, women and men at that time dined in separate halls, so she was cut off from her mother and any other support and forced to dance alone for Herod and the pleasure of his guests. Super creepy. And when Herodias hears about it, she goes out for blood. She can't directly go after Herod, he's the king, but she knows how to put him in a bad situation. Give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptist. And this puts Herod in a jam. John is a problem for Herod. He kind of wants to kill him, but he kind of doesn't. We read that he wanted to kill John, but he was afraid of the people because they considered John a prophet. So it wouldn't be politically expedient for him to kill John. Moreover, the gospel writer Mark adds that when Herod heard John, he was greatly puzzled, yet he liked to listen to him. So Herod is sweating. But he made this oath to his stepdaughter in front of all his guests, out in public, for everyone to see. And Herod is a man who craves the approval of others. He has to save face. And so perhaps reluctantly, he has John beheaded. Like I said, we're going to be looking at two dinners today. This is the bad one. And while that might seem super obvious, I don't want to gloss over it and leave us thinking that all this story has to tell us is, you know, don't have a dinner party that features debauchery and executions. I'm hopeful we're all in agreement on this point. If you're not, like, don't invite me over to dinner at your house. We're going to be talking about hospitality. But can we talk about Herod's heart for a second? Can we talk about this need for approval from others. It took Herod down a pretty dark path. And while we might not necessarily be walking that same path, I imagine this need for approval can lead to a darkness that many, if not all of us, know all too well. Like Herod, so many of us yearn for approval. Approval from our parents, or our kids, or our bosses, or our teachers, or someone we want to date. It's why so many of us are constantly running, constantly asking ourselves questions like, have I accomplished enough? Have I earned enough? Am I smart enough, or athletic enough, or involved in enough extracurriculars or clubs? Sure, Herod was showing up for dinner that night, but he was also hungry for something much greater than the food. Friends, do you know that same hunger, that same yearning, that deep desire for approval from others? What happens when we get in that place? Perhaps like Herod, we make compromises. He didn't want to behead John, but he did. Have you ever ended up doing something that you didn't want to do because you wanted some outside applause and approval? Perhaps like Herod, we put ourselves in positions where we end up making bad decisions. Maybe we get drunk or overextend ourselves financially or give too much of ourselves to someone we're attracted to. And perhaps like Herod, we might be tempted to use or even exploit others to make ourselves look good. When you're hungry for approval, what do you do? Is there a part of you that knows this is not the way? And yet you do it anyway because that craving is so intense and that yearning is so strong. I know many of you are still getting to know me. I just joined the staff team here about a month and a half ago. You might have picked up by now, like I enjoy a laugh or two, you know, I like a chuckle. And often that's fine and good, but I found that there can be a real shadow side to this. Too many times in group settings where I have wanted other people to like me, I have made jokes at the expense of my friends, people who do like me. So I end up hurting people that I love for a cheap laugh because I feel like I need more approval and more applause and more accolades. And these approval issues have shown up when Jen and I have hosted people too. It plays out for each of us in different ways. So for me, I'm pretty quick to extend hospitality. I like being around other people, and that's not a bad thing. But again, there's a shadow side to it. There are times where I find myself reluctantly extending an invitation because it feels like, you know, the right Christian thing to do. And because my heart isn't really in it, I don't really prepare that well. I'm not good on the shopping front. I don't make great conversation. I might not be fully present. You know, there have been probably too many times where my eyes have kind of glazed over. And then I kind of catch Jen looking at me like, what are you doing? You invited these people over. You need to talk to them. But I'm kind of like, hey, I invited them over. Right? I'm being hospitable. Can I like check that box off? Maybe I got the box checked. I made myself seem hospitable, kind of. Because I didn't want to withhold an invitation for what fear of people might think about me. I wanted that approval. Jen comes at it from a different angle. When Jen hosts, she wants to roll out the red carpet. She wants the house to be sparkling, the food to be amazing, the conversation to be scintillating. She's the host with the most, and it's awesome. But again, there can be a shadow side to it. The shadow side for her is that sometimes the focus can become less on the people and more on the product. If the reality doesn't match her vision, if the food doesn't turn out just right, if the house isn't as put together as she wants, then she can get a little irritated, to say the least. And that can pull her out of the moment. It can keep her from being present to our guests, keep her from truly hosting, and it can also make her just even reluctant to host in the first place because it just feels like too much of a lift to really pull off her high bar of expectations. She wants to dazzle people. And her fear is that if she doesn't blow them away, she's not going to get the approval that she's wanting from those moments. Even in something as simple as hospitality, we are confronted with our idol for approval from others. Its hold is so powerful. I'm curious for you, as we've been going over this theme of hospitality for the past couple weeks, are there moments where you felt that idol taking root for you, that sense, that need for approval coming up? Maybe you resonate with my experience or Jen's experience. Maybe there's your own experience that feels live for you. But the fact of the matter is that no matter how great of a party we'll throw, how amazing our cooking is, how fascinating our conversations are, how hilarious our jokes are, that if we are setting a table out of a desire to satisfy our own hunger for approval, we're never going to be satisfied. We're never going to be filled. Because what we need can never be met by others, whether it's in hosting or dating or performing or working or doing whatever it is we think that we need to be loved or validated. There's never going to be enough that we can do. We're only going to get true, lasting approval because of something that is done for us. And that's where this second dinner comes into play. After the events of Herod's dinner party, John's disciples take his body for burial, and they tell Jesus what happened. Now remember, John was Jesus' cousin. More than that, he was his friend. They were close. And so Jesus was understandably distraught when he heard about this, and he withdrew to a quiet place to grieve and to pray. By this point in his ministry, Jesus was incredibly popular. Crowds were regularly flocking to him. So even though he thought he was getting some time alone in a remote place, people still sought him out and they found him. Now, I don't know about you, but if that's the emotional place that I was in, I would not want to be hosting anything for anyone. Yet we're told that Jesus had compassion on them, that he healed their sick. And I love this about Jesus. I love that he is attentive to his own pain, to his own needs. He's not ignoring those, but he's not ignoring the needs of others either. He can hold both of those things in tension and trust that God is big enough to hold both of those things too. When the day is winding down and it's getting to be about dinner time, Jesus' disciples want to send the people away, but Jesus wants them to stay. Jesus wants to show them something. And so famously, he tells the disciples to feed the crowd. The disciples take a look at this crowd, which is 5,000 men plus women and children. So really, we're talking about a crowd of 15 to 20,000 people here. And they take a look and they say, we only have 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Barely enough to feed them, let alone thousands and thousands of people. And Jesus says, bring them to me. Instead of sending them away, he draws them near, and he directs them to sit down upon the grass. I like how the gospel writer Mark describes the scene. He explicitly says, the green grass. Not because he's just trying to paint us a picture of the scene, but because he's helping his readers make a connection between Jesus and Psalm 23, the famous psalm that begins with, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down on the green pastures. And then taking 5 loaves and 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to disciples, and the disciples gave them to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. This dinner could not be more different than the dinner that just preceded it, Herod's dinner. And we have to read them together. Matthew put them right next to each other for a reason, to help us understand the difference between the life that we so often chase for ourselves and the life that Jesus is offering us instead. Herod's dinner takes place in a lavish banquet hall. Jesus's takes place in a common field. Herod's guests were people of high position. Jesus's guests are the poor, the sick, the crowds, unremarkable people, yet precious to him. Herod's dinner had food and drink in abundance. Jesus's began with scarcity. Yet Herod's dinner was marked by exploitation and self-centeredness, whereas Jesus's was marked by celebration and service. Herod's dinner culminated in death. Jesus's culminated in life and satisfaction. Two different dinners, two different tables, two different hosts, two radically different outcomes. You see, Herod was just looking for more and more approval, which caused him to get more and more frustrated. He never got what he wanted. And maybe that has been your experience too. New York is a success-saturated city. And yet maybe, despite all of your successes, you still haven't had enough. You're still hungry. Friends, the good news of the Christian story is that Jesus invites us to come to his table because he already approves of us. Jesus looks at you and has compassion, a desire to heal, a desire to satisfy. And that's what was happening in the multiplication of the bread and the fish. It wasn't just a cool trick. There was more than a meal going on here. Jesus is demonstrating that he sees us and he sees our needs and our cravings and that he is able to provide for them in abundance. And it doesn't just stop there. Herod was so concerned with his own status that he was willing to kill for it. Jesus was so concerned with our status that he was willing to die for us. Later in his life, he would host another meal with his friends. He would gather them around the table and he would take the bread and give thanks and break it. Only this time, he would add that it is his body being broken for those whom he loves. And the next day, he would lay down his life on the cross to break the power of our sin and our shame so that we would never have to wonder whether or not we are worthy of love, whether or not we would be approved of. This is the heart of hospitality. Jesus invites us to his table. And when we dine there, when we truly eat there, then the hunger we have for the approval of others will subside. Because now we're actually eating a meal that will satisfy us. Perhaps there was a time when you began following Jesus and you tasted this meal and experienced this approval and it changed your life. You felt free and alive in ways that you never had before. But over time, you found that need for the approval of others come creeping back in. Now you find yourself making decisions out of that place of hunger and scarcity, and you don't like what's happening. You don't want to be back in that place. Friends, if that's you, then let today be a day where you come back to Christ's table. Remember how much Jesus loves you and approves of you. Ask the Holy Spirit to help you take hold of Jesus' approval for you so that you won't be tempted to go out and grab after something else. Something that seems like it might satisfy you, whether that be your successes at work or in finance or in your relationships, but will ultimately leave you feeling empty. And if you have been considering following Jesus, maybe you've been curious and exploring and asking questions, but you've never really taken that step to come to Jesus' table, then maybe today is the day to stop striving for love and for acceptance and allow yourself to receive love and acceptance that will never end. To hear God say to you, "You are my beloved child, and with you I am well pleased." If that's something that you're experiencing, know that one of our pastors or staff would love to talk with you and hear more about your story and help walk with you as you take this next step. Regardless of where you are in your faith journey, whether you have been following Jesus for decades or you're just beginning to engage with him, once we have begun to experience the life and approval of Jesus, then there's a way in which we become like the bread and like the fish. We are given, sent out to bring life and hope to those around us. And a big way that that happens is through this practice of hospitality. For many of us, when we think of God's mission in the world, we might think of incredibly dramatic moves. Fighting human trafficking, selling everything you have and going to a remote part of the world to tell people about Jesus, or having super intense spiritual conversations all the time. And those are important things. And sometimes those things happen. And yet I found that for many of us, a significant marker of mission is going to be how we extend hospitality to those around us. Even when we don't feel like we have much to offer. Embodying the hospitality of Jesus is both a simple thing and a revolutionary thing. As you've probably seen, hospitality is a big part of the culture here at Hope. I got here 6 weeks ago. I can tell you I have never eaten as much pizza in my life as I have here at Hope. It's been at least 12 basketfuls. We got some on the menu for you today, right? It's not flashy. It's simple. But it's part of our secret sauce. How many of you have sat around a Hope dinner table? Or if it's not a table, then it's a shared meal at the pew in East Village or around the foyer or the courtyard, right? It's not simple, or it's not flashy, it's simple. But there's something significant happening in those moments. Because meals are spiritual, relationships are spiritual, and it's in those moments where we begin to bond with one another and take steps deeper into our church's vision, which is to lead one another into a transformational relationship with Jesus and a community of faith. When we break bread together, we experience the presence of Jesus, and we're gonna walk away from that table differently than when we sat down. That's why we make such a big deal about food. That's why we do the intro to the Hope dinner and the Alpha dinner and the town hall dinners. You know, we could just send you an email. Here's the information. But that's not how communities are made. That's not how relationships are made, especially not across different types of people. That's not how walls are broken down and transformation happens, right? I haven't gotten a lot of emails like that. But I've sat at dinner tables like that? Yeah, absolutely. These dinners are more than a meal. And what we have happen here at Hope is what we desire happens in your homes, right? Our hope is that these dinners launch hundreds, thousands of dinners around the city, that you are inspired in these moments to go back to your own neighborhoods, to your own workplaces, to your own dining rooms, to your own families, and host your own parties, host your own gatherings. Doesn't have to be fancy, but you can bet that it will be revolutionary. You know, in this season, our family, Jen and our kids, we've been talking about what do we want our values to be in this season, especially as we're transitioning into new life here in the city. What do we want to guide us over the course of the year? And one value that's constantly risen to the top has been hospitality. Because, you know, now that we're in New York City, we've got, more space than ever to host. No, I don't think I've lived in a smaller space since I was a sophomore in college. But we love it. And so now we are pushed to be creative in how we think about hospitality, how we extend care. You know, it's too easy to have a scarcity mindset. I don't have enough space. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money, right? But our God is a God of abundance who takes our bread and fishes and makes 12 basketfuls. I've had dinner in amazing and beautiful homes where I have felt completely unseen. And I have sat in tiny little postage stamp living rooms with like Ritz crackers. And I have felt loved in ways that are just the top of the charts. This year, I want to stretch myself to go beyond my bounds of comfort and to extend hospitality, to love my neighbors well, to be a blessing to others, because I'm convinced that this is how Jesus wants to change the world, by giving them a taste of the love and the approval that can only come from him. So friends, how might Jesus be inviting you into hospitality today?